This morning, if I marked the right place, we're starting with sacrifices. Is that what everybody else has? Did I skip something that I didn't remember? I think we covered the covenant and the promises, correct?
What number is that?
It is D.
Hebrews 9:23?
Yes, Hebrews 9:23. And I added, I don't know if I told y'all that or not, but we're also going to look at 12:24 because that's really in the same thing. Okay, let's turn to Hebrews chapter 9. Laura, can you read chapter 9, verse 22 and 23, please?
And according to the law, one may almost say, offering the cleanse with blood, and without shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness. Therefore, it was necessary for the copies of the things in the heavens to be cleansed with these, but the heavenly things, but the heavenly things themselves may never sacrifice the
things. Okay. So what are we looking at in this section? Better what? Better sacrifices. So let's also read 12:24. Susan, would you read that, please?
And to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood, which speaks better than the blood of Abel.
Okay. Did everybody understand that this blood here was Abel's sacrifice and not his death? I get some light stares and some yeses and some I don't knows. Okay, the reason I put these two together is because Abel's sacrifice was better because it was offered by faith. Hebrews 11:4. We see by faith Abel offered a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained a testimony that he was righteous, God testifying about his gifts through faith. Though he is dead, he still speaks. And one thing I wanted us to look at and kind of show you why I really believe this is it. It talks about the sprinkled blood of Abel. It doesn't talk about the, you know, when he was killed, his blood wasn't just sprinkled. He died because of whatever. And if you'll look over at, we're going to read just in just a minute 9:24 through 28, where it talks about sprinkled. But so we see that is a. Well, let's go ahead and read that. I ask, why is it better? Why is Christ's sacrifice better? And we'll get to Abel. If we have any more questions about that, we'll talk about that as we go through here. And then at the end, if you have any questions, we can talk about that. Let's look at 9:24 through 28. Carol, can you read that?
For Christ would not enter a holy place made with hands, a mere copy of a true one, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. Okay. Nor was it that he would offer himself often as the high priest enters a holy place year by year with blood that is not his own. Otherwise, he would have needed to suffer often since the foundation of the world, but now, once at the consummation of the ages, he has been manifested to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. And it, inasmuch as it is appointed for man to die once, and after this comes the judgment, so Christ also, having been offered once to bear the sins of many, will appear a second time for salvation, without reference to sin, to those who
eagerly await. Okay, and let's read 10 through 14, and then we'll talk about this. Sandra, can you read that? Jan, do you know where we are?
I don't know where we were at first.
Okay, we're on question 5D, under better, under the first section of the... 5D. Okay. Okay, Sandra, go ahead.
But no sacrifices, there is a reminder of sins every year, for it is not possible that the blood of bulls and goats could take away sins. By that will, we have been sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. And every priest stands ministering daily and offering repeatedly the same sacrifices, which can never take away sins. This man, after he had offered one sacrifice for sins forever, sat down at the right hand of God.
Okay, so why is our sacrifice so much better according to these verses?
I said Christ offered once to bear sins of many.
Okay. I went back and looked, and we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but if you would turn to Leviticus to just kind of impress upon us the magnitude of the sacrifices that were offered. Starting in chapter 1, he talks, there's a law for the burnt offering. And I'm not really sure. Some burnt offerings were for sin, but of course when... Sometimes it was to prove their faith. When Abraham offered Isaac, that was called a burnt offering. And when Jethro offered the sacrifice in chapter 8 and Exodus 18, that was called a burnt offering. And so I'm not real clear, and I'm not here to try to tell you what all the sacrifices were for. I just want us to understand the magnitude. If these people were being realistic about wanting to go back to Judaism, to see how much better off they were now under Christ, because the sacrificing was done. Christ had sacrificed and it was done. So then in chapter 2, we have a law of a grain offering, but then we get back to the blood offerings in chapter 3, the law of the peace offering. And the peace offering was the, just certain parts of the animals, and it was sometimes just a dedication, something they wanted to give to the Lord. And then we get down to chapter 4, and then there was a sacrifice for intentional sin. If you knew you had sinned, you had certain sacrifices, certain things you had to do to offer sacrifices. And then, starting in chapter 5, there is the offering for intentional sins, something you knew you did. So they had unintentional offerings and intentional offerings. And then, and I don't understand what the difference in some of these are, but in chapter 6 and 7, it talks about the guilt offering. So these people were continually offering sacrifices. Thousands of animals died every year in Jerusalem and in Judah for the sacrifices, for their sins. And so how could they think that was better, something they had to continually do, constantly? This was something that they had to think about continually to do, was offer these sacrifices for their sinfulness and for their sins and for their thankfulness and for whatever. They were offering animal sacrifices. And what the writer of Hebrews is trying to get these people to see is what we have is better. Let's look at chapter 10, verse 1 and 2, and see there why it's so much better. Sandra, did you read? Okay. Elizabeth, would you read that? I can't remember who did what.
Leviticus 10?
No, Hebrews 10, 1 and 2.
Okay, I'm on.
Sorry, I'm jumping around. I just wanted us to go back and look at Leviticus to see when he's trying to tell them it's a better sacrifice. I mean, the Jews were used to these sacrifices, but they don't have to do that anymore. Okay.
For the law, since it has only a shadow of the good things to come, and not the very former things, can never, by the same sacrifices which they offer continually, year by year, make perfect those who draw near. Otherwise, would they not have ceased to be offered, because the worshippers, having once been cleansed, would no longer have had consciousness of sins.
Okay, so why is it so much, what is this makes it so much better? Why is it better? What do these verses talk about that that makes it better.
So how those Old Testament sacrifices were offered year after year after year, and they still couldn't completely take away the sins, they just pushed them.
That's right. They did not. It did not remove their sins. If Christ had not come and died, their sins never would have been removed. So it's important for us to remember that we're so blessed. We never lived under that law. We never had to deal with all of that. And those things. Let's look at chapter 8, verse 5. The writer says, we serve a copy of the shadow of the heavenly things. Just as Moses was warned by God when he was about to erect the tabernacle, see that you make all things according to the pattern which was shown to you in the mountain. That was a copy. They had a copy. We have the real. You know, when you have a copy of something or the idea behind to make something, you have this. Maybe a prototype's not the right word, but it wasn't the real thing. It was something to show them what God wanted them to do and show them their sinfulness. But God, the whole purpose in God doing that was so that when Christ came, they would realize and understand how much better they were. They had the real thing now. They had the real high priest, the only one high priest we looked at that last week, the one high priest that we needed continually offering sacrifices for us. Think if Christ had to continually keep coming and dying and dying and dying, our sacrifice was one time for all time. So let's look at 12:24 again. And but I'll tell you what, we've already read that. So go to chapter 9, verse 18 through 22, and I'll show you why I think this was connected. It was a sacrifice for sin. Let's see. I'm going to read this because there's certain words I want us to notice, and I've got them circled. So, for when every commandment was starting in verse 18, therefore, even the first covenant was not inaugurated without blood. For when every commandment had been spoken by Moses to all the people according to the law, he took the blood of the calves and goats and water and scarlet wool and hyssop and sprinkled both the book and itself and all the people, saying, this is the blood of the covenant which God commanded you. In the same way, he sprinkled both the tabernacle and all the vessels of the ministry with the blood. And according to the law, one may almost say all things are cleansed with blood, and without shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness. So then go back and look at 12:24 again. And he says, and Jesus is the mediator of a new covenant and to the sprinkled blood which speaks better than the blood of Abel. This is the connection, I think. Some people, and I guess if you read enough commentaries, I didn't do that, but I have heard people think that this was Abel's death, that he died. He was murdered, he was martyred, and then so was Christ. I think this is the sacrifice he offered because it talks about the sprinkled blood, which speaks better than the blood of Abel, because Abel was a sacrifice.
In my version, the New American Standard, it has it in italics. And to me, that throws it off. Well, I mean, we're not supposed to look at that part of it
mm-hmm.
and skip over it. To mm-hmm. me, that makes you think it could be his death. But
take it out. Mm-hmm. That's
it
right.
Even sound like
that. That's right.
More like
better than of Abel. Mm-hmm. Because that's what he's talking about. That's what he's been talking about here throughout this whole thing. Is really throughout the whole book, the sacrifices and the high priesthood and all that's kind of tied in. And I had a real hard time separating some of them out, but without being so repetitive.
I looked at it in the New King James, and mm-hmm. it says, than that of Abel. It doesn't say the blood.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing to do. You didn't have to check the American Standard, did you?
No, but I think...
That's the one that if I want to... I always go to that one because that is the most literal translation that we have, is the American Standard. In fact, some of the critics say it's almost like reading the Greek just in English words. And to me, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. Because it is in English and we can understand it. But
It was
Do you think he was able because just because of his sacrifice, his willing, because he gave the right sacrifice? Mm-hmm.
Because of by faith, he did it by faith. That what he was instructed to do.
Than that of Abel.
Mm-hmm. I figured it probably would. So these passages help us understand that Abel's that sacrifice was an offering to God, and blood was required. But the blood of Jesus and his sacrifice has made him now our mediator. He has become our sacrifice. He's our propitiation. He's not only the one offering the sacrifice as the high priest, he was the sacrifice as well. Look at, let me see if I got the right verse here. Yes, look at 2:17. Margaret, would you like to read that for us? Hebrews 2:17. Mm-hmm. 2:17.
Okay, therefore, it's given him in all things to be near like unto his brethren, that he might become merciful, faithful, high priest in everything pertaining to God to make propitiation. For the sins of others, of people, sorry.
Okay, so he was a propitiation. He was our propitiation, and he was our sacrifice. That's what that means. He became our sacrifice, and so he became a mediator because of his sacrifice. My notes are kind of. I did this, and I thought I would understand what I did. I do this. I write all these notes, and then I forget exactly what I'm wanting to look at. Hebrews 9, again. It talks, and we're not going to take time to read this because we've read these passages in other things. If not, we will read them. But if you start in verse 11 and go through verse 15, it talks about that him being our sacrifice. He's high priest. He entered through the greater, more perfect tabernacle, not with bloods of bulls and goats, but his own blood. He entered into the holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. And so, Jesus, we could not have a more perfect person to be our mediator because he is our sacrifice and our high priest. He wants us to make it, I guess would be the best way to put it. He's done everything in his power to make that possible. And that's why our sacrifice is so much better. And so, you know, he's sitting at the right hand of God. So what better can we have than that? Someone who has been here, who has suffered, and who willingly died for us to be there with the Father. And he's going to be our judge. And that gives me comfort because, yes, he's going to judge me, but he's done everything in his power to save me. I think people sometimes have this idea that Jesus is the high priest and he's up there on the throne, he's the king, and he just can't wait for us to do something bad so he can strike us dead and send us to hell. And that's the totally opposite of the Jesus I see. If he was willing to sacrifice himself for me, what would make me think he would do anything to ever... do anything but to help me. Okay, any other questions or sacrifices or comments on the sacrifice section? Sure is quiet this morning. Okay, on section E, we're going to do E and F together. What was y'all's E and F? I had two separate things there, and we're going to do those together. So let's read Hebrews 10:34-39. Jan, would you read that, please?
34-39. Mm-hmm. When you showed sympathy to the prisoners and accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourselves a better possession than a lasting one, Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. For yet in a very little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul.
Okay. And then let's look at Hebrews 11:16. Amanda, would you read that, please?
But as it is, we desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them.
Okay. So, the first one, what did you put as far as what is better?
Possession in heaven.
Possession in heaven, that's right. Our possession is in heaven. Their possession was what? And we're going to look at this a little more. What was their possession? What were they promised? Land, right. In a better country, 11:16. And again, country is in italics, but that's what it's talking about, a better place. He's talking about all these died in faith without receiving the promises. Abraham, Sarah, Noah, they, especially Abraham. Let's look back in Genesis chapter 15, verse 18 through 21 to see what Abraham was promised. And that's what the Jews were promised all along. That was their, this was their, the thing they hung their hat on, I guess you could put it. Lauren, can you read? Read Genesis 15, 18 through 21.
On the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants I have given this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, and the Jebusites.
That's quite a bit of land, isn't it? God had promised that to these people. This, the land promise was given again. These promises were told to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And then, of course, when Moses came to deliver them, that was the thing. I'm taking you to the land that you've been promised. And that was what they were looking for and waiting for. So let's look at Joshua 21. Today, some people think that that has not been totally taken care of. Joshua 21. Melissa, if you would read verse 43 through 45.
So the Lord gave to Israel all the land of which he had sworn to give to their fathers, and they took possession of it and dwelt in it. The Lord gave them rest all around, according to all that he had sworn to their fathers. And not a man of all their enemies stood against them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand. Not a word failed of any good thing which the Lord has spoken to the house of Israel. All came to pass.
Okay. So God had, the Israelites had received their possession. They received the land that God had promised them. He restates that again in 23. Joshua says that again in 23:14. Not one word of all the good words which the Lord your God spoke to you concerning you has failed, and all has been fulfilled. Not one of them has failed. So they had received all this land that he had promised to them. And so when we think of our possession, it's so much greater. We are promised... We'll talk about that in just a minute. What were the conditions put for them in place? You know, they were given this land, but it was not given without conditions. And I want us to realize that because we're promised our possession and our country, but there's conditions upon us receiving that. And we have to be very careful that we don't fall into the same trap that the Israelites were in. We're God's people. We're special. We're chosen. You know, I was baptized. My ticket's punched. I'm on the way to heaven. Nothing can keep me out. They didn't realize or did not appreciate, and either they didn't understand or didn't care. They just thought God would do it anyway. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 28. Verse 8 and 9, he says, the Lord will establish you as a holy people to himself, as he swore to you, if you keep the commandments of the Lord and walk in his ways. Down in verse 15, but it shall come about, if you do not obey the Lord your God to observe all and do all his commandments and his statutes, which I charge you today, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. And then he goes on to list the curses, several curses here in the next 16 through 19. And if you'll turn over then to chapter 27, again, he talks about this and the curses. In verse, we're not going to read all of them, but in verse 13, verse 10, he tells them, you shall therefore obey the Lord your God and do his commandments and keep his statutes, which I have commanded you today. And then he starts with the curses again. He tells them the curses starting in 13 down through the end of the chapter. And then verse 28:1, now if you diligently obey the Lord your God and be careful to do all your commands, do all his commandments, which I command you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth. And that's what they thought. They thought, we're above everybody. We're better than everybody. That was the Jews' attitude. And they were, in so many ways. They were the nation that God had chosen to bring about the great blessing of the Christ. But they didn't truly appreciate it and understand it enough to do his will. All they could hear was, we're God's people. And so they did not realize that, or they may have realized it but didn't care. Seems to me that they just did what they wanted to do. So what is, Lauren's already talked about this, our heavenly possession, or our better possession or country is a heavenly city. Look at Hebrews 11. Susan, would you read verse 6, please?
And without faith, it is impossible.
16. I'm sorry. I wrote down the wrong verse, and I changed it, and I didn't notice my note. It's 16.
Verse 16.
Yeah, that's...
But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to call their God, for he has prepared a city for them.
Okay, that's one of our verses on what this is... about what it is, a better country, and it's a heavenly one. It's an eternal one. Their promises had... I don't know that anywhere that they... It was always intended, God always intended to include all the nations in the promise. From the very beginning, he told Abraham, all nations of the earth will be blessed in you. And this is the fulfillment of that. Let's look at 2 Timothy chapter 4. Colonel, would you read verse 18? 2 Timothy 4, verse 18.
The Lord will rescue me from every evil being, and will bring me safely to his heavenly kingdom. To him be the glory forever and ever. Amen.
This is the kind of confidence we can have. Paul, at the end of his life, he knew that... God was going to rescue him, forgive him for whatever he had done because he had tried to live his life according to God's will, and that he would go into that heavenly kingdom. We're already in the kingdom, but this is a heavenly kingdom. This is our final resting place. Let's look at 1 Peter chapter 1. Sandra, would you read verse 3 and 4, please?
Peter,
chapter 1, verse 3 and 4.
Blessed be the God, Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his abundant mercy has begotten us again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled, and that does not fade away, reserved in heaven for you.
Isn't that a great comfort to know that, this is what our better country, our better possession, ours is going to be an eternal one. And it's all because of Jesus and his sacrifice and him becoming our high priest. Okay. Any questions or comments on the better possession or better country? Any other verses you'd like to look at? Okay, let's go back to Hebrews 11:35-40. Elizabeth, would you read that, please?
Women received back their dead by resurrection, and others were tortured, not accepting their release, so that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others experienced mockings and scourgings. Yes, also chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were torn in two, they were tempted, they were put to death with the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated. Men of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. And all these, having gained approval through the faith, their faith, did not receive what was promised. Because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they would not be made perfect.
Okay, so what is this? What is the better thing here that we have? Verse 35.
Resurrection.
Yes, we have a better resurrection. Was Jesus the first one ever raised from the dead? No. First Kings chapter 17 was the first time I found, there may have been one earlier, but Elijah raised the son of the widow of Zarephath. And then in Second Kings chapter 4, Elisha raised the Shunammite's son. Jesus raised the dead evidently while he was on earth, because when Jesus was speaking to the John the Baptist's disciples, it already happened at this time in Matthew 11:5, because he said, go tell John the dead are raised. And then of course Jesus raised Peter's mother-in-law, which we don't know if that was before or after he talked to John's disciples. And then Paul raised Eutychus. And so there have been a lot of people who have been raised from the dead. What is so different about Jesus' resurrection and their resurrection? There's one stark contrast between all the resurrections that I've mentioned and Jesus. That's exactly right. Jesus won't die again. All these other people face death again, but Jesus did not, or will not, ever again. And he ascended to heaven, and he's sitting at the right hand of God and rules over his kingdom. And so we have such great confidence that we have such a better hope and a better life here because of Christ, but we have a better place no matter what happens here. Can you imagine Paul making the statement that he made in 2 Timothy after all he had been through? But he was so looking forward to the better place. He knew that there was a better place prepared for him, and he was looking forward to being there with Christ and God. So it was, Jesus was raised never to die again, and nobody else will ever be able to say that, that's raised from the dead. Of course, we're not going to have anybody else raised from the dead, but any of the ones who were raised could never make that statement. So any question about the better resurrection, or any comments? Or okay, question number 6. Who would like to sum up all of these things in one sentence for us?
Jesus is the
Sandra?
I put everything is better since the blood of Christ was sacrificed once for all times.
Okay. Right. What he is what the writer is trying to get these people to see is what the new covenant is so superior to the old covenant. Why do you ever want to go back under the old covenant? What you have, it would be like someone trading in a Model A. I mean, having a brand new car today with all of our electronic things, and you can talk on your phone and all that, and saying, "Oh, I want to go back and drive in the Model A." That, you know, you just, it's bare bones. No comparison. And that's what he's trying to get the people that he's writing to see, is that they have something now that is so much better. That, let's look at chapter 12. Verse 25 through 29. Lauren, would you read that, please?
See that you do not refuse him who speaks, for if they did not escape who refused him who spoke on earth, much more shall we not escape if we turn away from him who speaks from heaven, whose voice leaves with the earth, but now he has promised, saying, yet once more I shake not only the earth, but also heaven. Now this yet once more indicates the removal of those things that are being shaken as of things that are made, that the things which cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom in which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire.
He's telling them that don't refuse him. For those who refused him before, they were warned. I can't be sure, but I wonder if this is not when it talks about the earth shaking. Does anybody remember when God descended and he actually spoke and the people heard his voice and the earth was quaking and all that in Exodus, and how afraid the people were, and they said, "Oh, we're going to do everything he says. Just don't let him talk to us anymore, Moses. You talk to us." And yet they refused him anyway. They were warned, and he warned them. But they refused him anyway. And he's warning us, these people first, and then us through this letter. Don't reject this. Don't refuse. Don't. It's going to happen. What God says is going to come true. And we need to do this with gratitude. And we'll talk about this more when we get to our let us phrases. But we have a kingdom that cannot be shaken. This kingdom is going to endure forever, and nobody can take it away. They can kill us, but they cannot destroy the kingdom, because our king is in heaven ruling, and nobody can change that. Okay. Any questions or comments on this first section, on the section of the betters? And I wanted us to have a good understanding of that, so when we go through, it will give us more urgency to do the let us phrases. When we're looking at the let us, what he's asking us or telling us to do, for us to do, then maybe it will help us understand the urgency of us to do what he tells us to do. Because people under the old covenant didn't. And we're not going to, this is it. This is all we're ever going to have. That's all we're ever going to need. And so we have to be diligent in finding out what he wants us to do. Okay. Any questions or comments? Okay, we only have about 2 minutes left, so I'm not going to start one of the let us phrases. We'll wait and we'll pick up there next week. I have no idea how many of them we'll get through, so